is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome in, everybody. Thursday edition of the Lombardi Line, live from downtown Las Vegas, our Circa Sportsbook studio. I'm Ben Wilson, in for Stormy rest of the week. Michael Lombardi is here. We are very fired up today, Michael, because it is August 1st. Calendar is flipped. Preseason football starts tonight with a Hall of Fame game. And August means we are now about a month out from the start of the NFL actual regular season. So a great time all around whenever that calendar flips.
You can't wait, right? I mean, we get football from this Thursday all the way through to February, whether you like it or not. And I'm excited for it. So, yeah, it's good to have August come on the calendar. You know, enough summer fun. We get going with this football stuff. We'll get a game tonight, which I'm excited to watch and see the uniforms again. And life will go on. I'm anxious to watch this kickoff coverage team, how it's all going to work.
Seriously.
It's going to take a little bit of my eye to get used to it, but I'm excited for it.
That, I think, for many people will be an extremely enticing and exciting part of preseason football. It is the Bears and Texans tonight from the Hall of Fame game in Canton, Ohio. The football game in general, though, is part of this weekend. It is not really the focal point. It is the Hall of Fame induction, all the other events that go along with that. And as a result, because it is the extra preseason game for these two teams, we will not see starting quarterback Caleb Williams nor any of the Bears starters. That announcement was made about a day and a half ago, and that resulted in a flip of favorites here. Bears originally were the favorite, Michael. Texans now slight favorites. Total in the low 30s there. We're focusing, though, on some of these camp battles. And for Houston, probably the offensive line depth will be the most intriguing storyline to watch tonight, especially because the backup quarterbacks Houston has behind C.J. Stroud actually have a lot of NFL experience. So you'll know pretty early how that Texan offensive line, especially as some of the backups rotate in, just how far along they are based on the protections we'll see there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we're going to see Blake Fisher, their second-round draft pick out of Notre Dame. He's going to get a chance to play left tackle. So that's something you want to evaluate. You know, and they've got a bunch of other guys. They traded for Kendrick Green from the Steelers this past year, so he's going to be in there. I mean, there's a lot of ways that you can examine this line and, you know, and take a look at some players. Because, look, you're going to need linemen 6, 7, 8, 9 to help you. Look at the Browns last year. I mean, they were on linemen 9, 10, 11, and 12 by the end of their season. So you got to find some depth in the offensive line, knowing that Titus Howard never stays healthy, knowing that Tunsil's always been. Shaq Mason's an older player, over 30 years old. So they're going to have to find some depth. This is the perfect game to do it.
And it also leads into the battle of arguably biggest weaknesses for these two teams. Texans, it has been the offensive line. Chicago Bears, what are you getting on a D-line that had nothing until the midseason acquisition of Montez Sweat? There's a lot of guys you would think, Michael, who are in a position where with an impressive preseason, with a number of young players stepping up late last year for the Bears alongside Sweat, that's a huge opportunity amidst a defense that has a lot to prove amidst the season in 2023 where they did show tremendous improvement, but now you're trying to back it up going from the spoiler role late in the year when you had nothing to play for, nothing to lose, to now expectations that are a lot higher now for Chicago.
Well, look, I mean, they got 30 sacks last year. Six came after they made the trade for Sweat. You know, they are very similar to the Falcons. You know, they don't get any pass rush from their front seven. You know, the Sweat gave them 6 sacks. Walker gave them, you know, 3. Last year the kid from Indianapolis. He came in and gave him 4 sacks, but he's still a free agent on the street. They haven't come in, but there's really no one else. I mean, that's the problem with this Bear team. Everything is predicated on the rush, but they don't really have a good rush right now. So it'll be interesting to see how this all works out. They've got to find more defensive linemen. Brad Bakes told us that Dexter's bigger, stronger, more physical. Andre Billings, who they signed from the Falcons a couple of years ago, from the Raiders last year, you know, they're not getting any pass rush out of those guys. They got to have to get a 3 technique that can get up the field.
Probably Dexter, the biggest piece that the Bears inside the building are high on. You had Zach Pickens, who came on pretty strong, but those are now, you know, year 2 guys. And you wonder, okay, now that you're going into year 2 again, expectations tend to rise there for Chicago team that got Jones and Gakwe. Those were second and third on the list last year with 4.5 and 4 respectively, Michael. But you're only talking about one single player, Walker at 3.5, too. One player with more than 5, and that was Montez Sweat, who was added midseason there for the Chicago Bears. Again, that line right now sitting Texans minus 1.5. 31.5 is your total. A lot of thought generally as you just back the under, but there's actually been the last couple of years, overs have cashed in here, and that's where we always say tread lightly on this stuff as far as your bankroll goes, because we have tended to see some very random sort of flukish second half results, even though respected groups have been on the under in these situations. Sportsbooks have adjusted. This was a total that used to be in the high 30s for the Hall of Fame game. Now it's low 30s at best, but the last 2 years it has gone over. Previously, though, a very good profitable under run, 7-2 the previous 9 years to the under.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what receive. You know, obviously they've got, you know, Robert Woods is on their team. He carries a huge cap number. I don't expect he to hit him play. John Michie the third, they've got to get something out of him. Second round pick in 22, they really haven't because of the medical situation with him. Skoranek, who they claimed off the waiver wire from the Rams, they're going to play him. So, you know, they've got Davis Mills, they've got Case Keenum, and obviously the great Tim Boyle from Black Friday of the Jets is going to be out there. But again, it's going to come down to can this line protect and what do they have with this offensive line? Usually when you watch a team like the 49ers or the Kyle Shanahan tree, which Bobby Slowick comes from, is usually they can run the ball. There's always a back somewhere where you feel like, okay, this guy could really make their team. So we'll see if they have that and if they've improved their run game in the zone scheme.
First look for two very, very hyped teams coming into 2024 for different reasons, but still both high expectations for the Texans and the Bears. We also did get some news of the day here, Michael, as far as contract extensions. A player that has been on the mind of a lot of evaluators over the last week, that's Tristan Wirfs, anchor of a Tampa Bay Buccaneer offensive line that has been up and down, plagued with injuries, inconsistencies over the last couple of years, viewed to be a middle of the pack to slightly below average O-line, but Wirfs does get his deal done as that anchor to protect Baker Mayfield's blindside at QB. Highest paid now offensive lineman in the league here as he surpasses the previous couple guys that were right around his range, just over $28 million now a year, pulling up the updated contract, passes Penei Sewell, 5 years, just over $140 on that contract extension. And it was a deal that the Bucs, after investing so heavily in Baker Mayfield, previously investing in Mike Evans at wide receiver, trying to bolster this offense that has been plagued with inconsistency, you had to do this, and Wirfs, as we expected, Michael, now is locked up here for the next few years.
Well, Graham Barton, the first-round pick, starts at center. Cody Mauch, the second-round pick from last year, starts at right guard. And Luke Gotta-Dee, he starts at right tackle, 22nd second-round pick. So they've got three – they have two number ones in the line, two number twos, and they got Ben Brenson, who's a free agent from the Giants. So this line has to improve at some point, you know, because they're 32nd team in rushing. They have not been able to run the football effectively in the last two seasons. And it starts with this line, but they had to get Wirfs handled. I mean, he's a really good player. He's their best lineman. He's a left tackle. He can block anybody in the division, including Brian Burns, handily. He does a good job in that area. And so, you know, they had to get this thing done. And I think obviously it was something. Now, this is going to impact, this will impact the future contracts moving forward. Trent Williams specifically, because Trent right. Williams now is way further down. That draft class, Andrew Thomas got paid. Darrishaw got paid, right? You know, we see Wirfs get paid. Now it's going to come time for Trent Williams to come in and get paid as well.
And with the age of Trent Williams, you figure the longevity of a contract will not be the same as somebody of, say, a Tristan Wirfs, who's a younger player getting a longer deal done. But it's more the average annual value now for Williams. Where does that now set your expectation here, Michael, now that we've really seen the last dominoes to drop as far as potential offensive linemen getting their extensions?
I think this is more about guaranteed money, Ben, than it is about average per year, right? I mean, you can make average per year anything you want. They could make them $35 million a year if they just put $50 million, $50 million, $50 million. None of it's guaranteed, and he gets cut, right? So this is really just about guaranteed money, and he's going to want some guarantees. It's a little bit like what they did with – look, let's face it. You know, when they redid Matt Stafford's contract, they didn't put a bunch of money in there. They just guaranteed a little bit more money for him, which is what these players want at this age, you know. And so I think that's where Trent Williams wants more guarantee, and he's going to get it. Obviously, that'll help him out.
Now we wait on the San Francisco front. Multiple fronts for San Francisco. Trent Williams, one of the big pieces there on that offensive line. We're also talking, too, about how with it being the Hall of Fame game tonight, that is just one of the many ceremonies going on. The one that is most impactful, though, is the Hall of Fame induction that will happen into Friday night and Saturday here. And I know you wanted to share some thoughts, too, on this class of 2024 with some great, great names on it and some players, too. Like, for people like me, you know, growing up in the early 90s, these were a lot of guys that really shaped, you know, for someone like me, NFL viewing, just unbelievably exciting, game-changing type players when you think about a Dwight Freeney, a Devin Hester, and Andre Johnson. And of course, the Julius Peppers, who had just an unbelievable display of athleticism coming into the league, not unlike something we've seen really at all in the past, and that defensive line position, and then Patrick Willis, of course, the other player getting inducted. Kind of surreal for me as a child of the early 90s, Michael, to see these five in particular get inducted.
Yeah, I mean, Freeney particularly, because I can remember doing Freeney coming out, and I was a huge Freeney guy, and one of the scouts for the Raiders thought, you know, he's a nickel, he's a dime a day player, and I'm thinking, man, we're watching the different game here, because you know Freeney was undersized at Syracuse, he wasn't a big man, and nobody could understand it. In that draft, they not only got Freeney, but they got Robert Mathis. Tony Dungy scheme really fit Freeney really well, and so they were able to pull that off. Peppers, to me, was so unique in terms of size, speed, could do all the different things, could play up, down, you know, and Andre Johnson was one of those receivers that you take early in the draft that is a blue chip player, that is a X receiver who you've got to double on every single play. And so it's a great class. I was happy to see Gratishire get in, Steve McMichael certainly. I'm disappointed Buddy Parker didn't get in as one of the selections, but I never understand what the Hall of Fame committee's voters do anyway.
And that's also a good point on top of that. Very good class for those five we just mentioned as well that will be inducted here this weekend. We'll have a lot more football to get to, including college football, because today is a huge day for us at VSiN. We'll tell you about our big guest list coming up as well, and also discuss the newly released college football betting guide, which is out now as we get things underway on the Thursday edition of the Lombardi Line. Right now on our new look, VSiN.com, all sorts of content on tonight's Hall of Fame game, whether it is Steve Mackinnon breaking down all the recent trends, Adam Burke on what to expect from the backups who play. Also, Matt Eumanns breaking down not only tonight's game, but also all of the preseason quarterback depth charts around the NFL heading into this preseason. We have that along with best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state betting tools, and betting guides like our college football guide just released today. With 23 days until the start of the college football season, 35 until we get to the start of NFL regular season football here on VSiN.com.
Do you disagree with these takes?
No way.
No way.
Or do you approve?
Oh, no doubts. No doubts. No doubt in my mind.
No diggity, no doubt.
It's time to ask Michael Lombardi, no way or no doubt.
Been waiting for this all week, Michael. Here we go. No way or no doubt. We have to start in Big D with the Cowboys. This, to me, is probably the hardest one to answer definitively because it's Jerry Jones. Who knows what is going on through his mind and what they will actually do. But no way or no doubt here, two or more of the Cowboys' trio of pending contracts with quarterback Dak Prescott, wide receiver CeeDee Lamb, and top defender Micah Parsons. Two or more of those three will go into the regular season without a new deal, Michael. No way or no doubt.
No doubt. Yeah, I don't see him getting Parsons done or Prescott done. I think the only one who has a chance to get done is CeeDee Lamb. Now, Schefter was just on McAfee today talking about how Brandon Ayuk, they're not even close to getting a deal done. It's not happening. Some people think Lamb is, but, you know, I don't see it. I don't see that they're going to get Prescott done or Parsons done. So I think both those guys are going to have to play on their contract. There's no question.
It seems like of the three, the one that's probably the most up in the air as far as timing-wise would be the Prescott, simply because it's a quarterback. Do you feel like pressure comes in and they say, all right, we just really want this done by the start of the year? Where I'm with you, Parsons does not seem close. Reports indicate that Lamb is the most likeliest, but like if you were saying one, okay, yeah, you feel confident. I mean, two, I feel like it's 50-50 at best for Prescott, and that's probably not a spot you want to be in going into this year if you're Prescott, at least from the agency part.
I think reverse, though, Ben. I don't think Prescott wants to get a deal done. Like, yeah. I don't think he wants to get one done. I think he kind of just wants to go through the season. He's not worried about injury. He's focused on the game, and he's in the draft. I mean, he's negotiated no franchise. So he has everything to gain by playing it out.
Can be the next Kirk Cousins. Get that 1 year get that bet on yourself. I realize it's a bit apples to oranges, but it's a similar principle there for Dak Prescott this year. No way, no doubt. We're talking guys without contracts yet, at least, as far as extension goes. The two big ones in San Francisco, the left tackle Trent Williams and the wide receiver Brandon Ayuk, both looking for new deals. Trent Williams is more important to the 49ers team than Brandon Ayuk. Michael, to me, there's no doubt about it that Trent Williams, without him, this offensive line is one of the worst in the league. I say this is an easy one.
I think it is. And look, I think their 49ers are at the point with Brandon Ayuk. They've tried their best. They can't get it done. And life goes on. And either he takes the deal or not. But, I mean, he's acted as if he's Randy Moss out there. Like, seriously. You know, they're going to get on without him. And I think life will go on without him if they have to. Will that mean anything? Look, one thing I've learned a long time ago, the 49er uniform is going to be good. They're going to be good with or without Brandon Ayuk. They may not win a Super Bowl, but they're going to be good with or without him.
Like, you take Ayuk out, and it's a team that everybody around the league would agree, even with, you know, obviously with Ayuk in, this is the best collection of pass catchers in the NFL. If Ayuk's not on the team anymore, well, you still have the best running back room in the league, largely because of Christian McCaffrey. You still have the most dynamic set, especially at the tight end position with where George Kittle is at, his ability to stretch the field, even how they've been able to use guys like Kyle Juszczyk, so many different elements and weapons to throw at him in the passing game. It's still easily a top five, top 10 unit. Whereas the fall off without Williams, who's really just holding together this line right now, Michael, it is unbelievably stark. So that's an easy one for us here on No Way or No Doubt. How about this one from Pittsburgh? Justin Fields will start at quarterback at some point for the Pittsburgh Steelers this season. No way or no doubt.
There's a word out today that he's looking good. I think he will start a game. I don't think Russell will be able to stay healthy the whole year. So give me that one. I would say there is no doubt he probably will.
To me, it's more than no doubt. It's you have to start setting an over-under on how many games that you end up seeing Russell Wilson miss this year. Or at the very least, you see Fields start. Like, I don't know. I would set that number at probably 3.5, 4.5, and probably lean over on Fields. I certainly believe the early reports clearly indicate that the leash is going to be as short as anybody in the league for Russell Wilson. I can think Mike Tomlin owes anything to either of those guys, has any sort of past history where he feels like they're deserving of second and third chances. No way.
No,
not how it is.
But here's what I worry about, Ben. If Wilson protected the ball last year, if Fields doesn't protect the ball, then I've got some real issues, you know, because Mike Tomlin's not going to tolerate somebody that doesn't protect the football. There's no question about that.
And especially with the schedule that the Steelers have to face, toughest in the NFL, you know, there's no real room for any of the lack of ball control to happen. And that's where you're seeing Fields start here, number two. But you got to think he'll get a shot at some point. No way or no doubt here into NFL training camp week one. And it's always, it would not be training camp unless we had the kind of ridiculous, okay, let's make mountains out of a molehill sort of moments here. Aaron Rodgers getting into it with Garrett Wilson on the sideline. Jets fans should be worried about Rodgers and Wilson's animated sideline discussion, as you can see on your screen from New York Jets media. No way or no doubt on that one.
No way. I mean, look, it's basically football, and there's going to be some conflict. It's practice. There's going to be some things that don't go well, and there's going to be some conversations. And sometimes, you know, those conversations get animated, but there's no way this is going to disrupt their team at all. No way.
100%. The other thing that people don't seem to really be adding as part of context to the story, you would argue that on paper, roster-wise, the Jets have the best defense, the structure on their team, at least the starters in the NFL. Like, you're going to see that Jets offense struggle in camp because they're going against dudes on the other side. And it's also a new offensive line that's unproven, at least meshing together so far, Michael. So this was inevitable, and there's no way that it's going to be an issue.
Yeah, I think to me that's the thing. I mean, like, look, they just have to be smart. I mean, you want to play fast. You want to get the lead. I think if I'm the Jets, if I were Robert Saleh, I would be all over the fact that, look, we've got to find a way to get ahead. We got to play from in front, use our pass rush, create some turnovers, use the strength of our defense to become stronger. If 100%. We're in these tight games back and forth, then it won't be as effective. So for me, I think that's what they have to do.
Talking no way or no doubt on this Thursday edition of the Lombardi Line as the calendar flips to August. With the calendar flipping, it means now camp about to be open, not only for NFL as it already is, but college football. And you see this, Dylan Raiola, the five-star quarterback, expected to start for Nebraska. A lot of hype for him this year. and he's going with the full Mahomes showing up to campus in Lincoln, Nebraska. No way or no doubt, Raiola is college football's next Patrick Mahomes, not only apparently with the wardrobe, but also on the field.
Well, I mean, I think to me it's interesting we talk about that because, you know, he comes out of high school with way more publicity. Remember, Mahomes is a three-star kid. Yeah. He wasn't even that highly recruited. So I think to me it'll be interesting how that all comes out. But I do think that you know, he comes with size, speed, and those credentials that are really impressive. And I would be surprised if he wasn't a really good player.
I think that is all true. I would also say no way from the standpoint of think about the system they're in. I mean, you're going, it's not like this is Texas Tech and Raiola's going to get to throw 60 times a game, putting up video game numbers in a, you know, legit NFL type system. I mean, this is Matt Rhule coming in, has been proven as a builder of programs, but it's all about physicality for Nebraska, trying to assert their dominance in a Big Ten where you need to have that to have a lot of success. So at least for now, there's a long way to go. Let's temper our expectations a little bit for a freshman who does have a lot of hype. And clearly, as you mentioned, Michael has the size and strength. Yeah, no doubt on that. All right, this also goes into our college football betting guide, which is now out today. No way or no doubt, Alabama, their chances of repeating as SEC champs are better than their betting odds indicate. No way or no doubt, not the favorites this year, with Georgia overwhelmingly expected to reassert the claim to the SEC.
I think for sure they're a favorite. I think they may not be a favorite, but I think they have to be somebody to reckon with. I really do, and I think they can be very good. And I have faith in Caden DeBoer. I really do. I think he's got a chance to be. He's been a good coach. He's coached in big games. He took all the best players with him. So I think there's certainly a chance that they can be. They're overlooked. I really believe that.
Certainly the thought is, if you're Kalen DeBoer, you took a Washington program that was a mess in many regards and win 25 games over 2 years, including a trip to the national championship game. You got to think, when you inherit the boat of riches that Alabama gets, is maybe, even though they might not have been at the absolute top with Nick Saban retiring, you have to feel like that's a very, very advantageous position to be in. Just pulling up the updated SEC odds right now, Alabama currently here sitting just behind the expectation of Georgia to win it all. They're just behind Texas as well. So third favorite, I would probably say, based on the pedigree, you got to put them second there ahead of Texas. And I would agree. It is no doubt that they have some value on them heading into this year. 15-1 to win it all for the Alabama Crimson Tide. We'll reset, get into hour number two, and get into what is on Michael's mind for this Thursday.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Who will win the Heisman Trophy? Who will be in the College Football Playoff Final Four? Which teams will surprise and which teams will disappoint? All of those questions and more can be answered by downloading the newly released 2024 VSiN College Football Betting Guide. Detailed team previews, picks, and best bets from our writers, hosts, and personalities are just a few clicks away by becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber. Not only will you get the College Football Betting Guide, but also our NFL Betting Guide and an all-access pass to daily best bets, plus full access to our exclusive betting splits. You can check out all the current offers right now at vsin.com/subscribe. A huge contributor to the guide, Matt Humans. We've got him right now, Michael. Pumped to get Humans on, as always. We'll get some thoughts, too, on the Hall of Fame game for tonight as we go out to our progressive guest line. Matt Humans, host of VSiN tonight. Usually up at all hours, but he is up right now at 2:15 Eastern. That underdog cashes there, Humans. This is usually nap time for Matt. I'm happy you're awake right now. I know you're excited, too, for the Hall of Fame game tonight. As much as we won't see any of the starters really go here for the Bears, what are your expectations, at least to see in the preseason, that have some questions I know you certainly want to see answered there on the Chicago side of things?
I don't think we're going to get many questions answered tonight. I'll tell you this. I was up all night watching the Olympic golf tournament, but I'm fired up to have football back. And, you know, even when you have a battle of backups like you're going to have in Canton, Ohio tonight, it's still the NFL. This is what we live for in the sports betting world, and it's going to be great to watch it. And because it feels like the long, boring summer is finally over, and now we can see the light at the end of the tunnel. But, you know, Tyson Bagent did start some games for the Bears last season. He's going to get to start tonight. I think you have a pretty good quarterback rotation for the Texans, starting with Davis Mills and Case Keenum and some guys who can play. It's interesting because the last 2 years, the Hall of Fame games barely slipped over the total where you had high 30s in points and you had scores in the fourth quarters of those games. In the previous two Hall of Fame games, really low scoring games with 19 and 24 points. I was going to play under the total at 33, but that total got hit before I could bet it. And down to 31, I left it alone. As of right now, believe it or not, I have no action on Bears-Texans tonight, so I'm not sure if I'm going to do anything with it. But I got a future play of some sort on the Bears. I played the Bears under 9 wins, and I really believe – I'm not a big believer in Matt Eberflus as a head coach. He's got a long way to go, and he's still – Caleb Williams – is going to make some sensational plays. He's also going to make a lot of mistakes this year. Rookie quarterback, and I got some questions about the offensive line in front of him. And the Bears, the first two-thirds of their schedule is pretty soft, but the back end is loaded. In fact, all of the Bears' division games are between weeks 11 and 18, and they got to go 10-7 to beat you on this win total. Under 9, I think, is a really good bet. I could see the Bears getting 8 wins, possibly 9. I can't see them getting to 10. So that's the only play I've actually got right now in the NFC North.
Hey, Matt, what's your overall strategy when it comes to betting the preseason? I know you wrote a column about it, but share that with the audience.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of different angles to look at, Michael. And one is coaches who want to win. You know how that is. How much game plan information is going to be released and in terms of how many starters are going to be played. But I love to analyze the quarterback depth charts, and I put a story up on vsin.com about that today. I went through all the rosters and put the depth charts together. You're not dancing with the stars in these games. You're betting on the backups, and we're going to see very little frontline starting quarterback action here in the preseason. So you have to know the personnel and the backups, how much time those guys are going to get, and who can – Michael, a big key in the preseason when you're betting it is with so many backup offensive linemen on the field, you get a lot of plays to break down. Which quarterbacks can make something out of a broken play? Which quarterbacks have running ability, can get outside the pocket, make something happen? Because a lot of times that makes the difference in these games. You know, which quarterback can run and make a play in the third or fourth quarter? And those teams are going to win games more often than not. I went through all the depth charts and, you know, looked for the teams I felt like had the best quarterback rotations for the preseason. And I found a few that I feel like have the worst, and you know, that'll be a starting point for me when I handicap the preseason.
Well worth your time checking out that article at vsin.com. All of the depth charts for different NFL team quarterbacks for the preseason from our Matt Eumanns, who's with us right now in our Progressive Guest Line. Let's go to the College Football Betting Guide out today. You were tasked with breaking down the Big Ten here, Matt. Just on our last segment, we were discussing, you know, how to differentiate between Ohio State and Oregon, two high-powered teams at the top of that league. What do you make of that battle for the top there, what clearly seems to be a 1A, 1B situation heading into this year?
Well, the Ducks might actually even have a slight edge in this. And the reason is they've got the best quarterback in the Big Ten, in my opinion, and Dylan Gabriel. And also they get a home game against Ohio State. So that's going to be obviously a monster game in the Big Ten when the Buckeyes have to go to Oregon. And so you kind of get a leg up there with Dylan Gabriel and a home game against the Buckeyes. Other than that, I think both teams should win at least 10, probably 11 games when you look at the schedules. I think these are both legit national title contenders, and I'm not going to recommend necessarily a win total play on the over because one thing goes wrong, teams might go under a total like 10.5, but these teams look extremely strong. You know, I really do rate Oregon right up there with Ohio State and Georgia at the top of college football, so I don't think you're going to find much of an edge there trying to bet those win totals. Those teams look so strong.
Well, you know, I know you spent a lot of time in the Big Ten. Is there a sleeper team you think the under total win total is too low on?
You know what? There's a lot. There's 18 teams in this conference, and I put a win total opinion up on each of them. I'll tell you what my best bet is, Michael, and it's the Michigan Wolverines under 9, and it's not a sleeper team. It's a national championship team, but I think the betting public expects, well, Jim Harbaugh is gone, but this Michigan machine is just going to keep cranking out wins. I don't see how that's going to happen. Harbaugh took some coaches with him to the NFL. Michigan had 13 players drafted, the most of any college program. Only 7 players who started games of any kind last season. These are not full-time starters. Come back. You've got a new quarterback you got to break in. Offensive line's unproven. Wide receivers are young. It's going to be a new-look defense with a new coordinator, Wink Martindale, who comes from the NFL. This is not going to be the number one scoring defense in college football like it was a year ago. Michigan starts the season with five straight home games, but Fresno State, Texas, USC in that group. If you just take the three top five preseason opponents that the Wolverines play, Texas, Oregon, and Ohio State, if they lose those three games, the best they can do is 9-3. Michigan's going to lose a couple other games along the way. Got a road game at Washington, like I said, and Ohio State's a road game. There's some of these spots on the schedule you think, well, that's going to be a win for Michigan. Hey, this program's basically starting over. New coach, new quarterback, new coordinators. I think it's way too much to ask to say that Michigan could go over 9 and get to 10-2. I think 9-3 is the best case scenario. That's why I really like Michigan under 9.
Even worth laying a little juice on that -135. Current odds there for Michigan with Matt Eumanns joining us here, host of VSiN tonight. Weeknights at the network. One team you are a little bit higher on than the market, at least from a win total perspective, will go to the Iowa Hawkeyes. Finally, you get rid of the nepotism hire, I guess we could, I know I'm putting words into Iowa's mouth, but let's call it what it is. With Kirk Ferentz's son, Brian, being the OC, he's now gone. You bring in Tim Lester. What do you expect to see now in a very new-look Iowa team that finally hopes to be looking like a 2024-esque offense in some sort of fashion when we see them on the football field coming up this fall?
You know what a miracle was last college football season? Iowa had the worst offense in the nation and still won 10 regular season games. I don't know how. Obviously, we watched the games. It was defense. It was special teams. It was the defense and special teams setting up scores or scoring. And that's how the Hawkeyes were able to go 10-2 in the regular season. Now, in the final two games against Michigan and Tennessee, they got outscored 61-0. The offense was inept. Brian Ferentz did get dealt. I'm not going to make excuses for him because he was a poor offensive coordinator. But Cade McNamara, the transfer from Michigan, was injured early in the season, and Iowa did not have a competent quarterback to back him up. McNamara's back. LaShawn Williams, one of the top rushers in the Big Ten, is back. You've got a typical Iowa Hawkeyes offensive line, big, strong, four senior starters, one junior. Defense that allowed 14.8 points a game brings eight starters back, two of the best senior linebackers in the Big Ten. Jay Higgins, Nick Jackson, these guys are going to play in the NFL. I really think that Iowa's going to be one of the top three defensive teams, a much improved offense. And how about this schedule? No Oregon, no Penn State, no Michigan. Mm-hmm. Get home games against Washington, Wisconsin, Nebraska. I think there's a good chance Hawkeyes are going to be favored in 10 games. Not saying they're going to win them all, but I think they're going to win at least 8, probably 9. I like Iowa over 8. That total was 7.5, and it was bumped up to 8 recently. But I would still play the Hawkeyes over 8.
At Matt Eumanns 247, where you can follow Matt Eumanns. Also, be on the lookout. Those annual fast food rankings coming out next week. I was back in my home state of Wisconsin, Matt, where Culver's, always a perennial powerhouse, resides.
That's the truth, buddy.
Great to see you as always, man.
Thanks,
appreciate
guys.
It. Matt Eumanns with us here, Matt, on the Lombardi Line. When we return, it is a Thursday on the show, Michael. That means Mike Palm. He's in studio. We've got Palm's Pressing 3 coming up in 15 minutes. We'll go around the dial, talk some different topics with Mike, see if there's any action he's seeing from Circa on the Hall of Fame game for tonight when we come back.
Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Right now on our new look website, VSiN.com, Matt Eumanns, a full breakdown on the NFL preseason quarterback depth charts. Well worth your read ahead of the Hall of Fame game. First preseason game tonight, Adam Burke, Steve Mackinnon have their breakdowns, all sorts of trends, and other key facts you need to know for the Hall of Fame game tonight. We also have best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state, tons of Olympic coverage, along with all the betting tools and betting guides like our college football betting guide that is out right now, all on vsin.com. And it leads us into our final segment. Here we go.
Yes, I say it's pressing.
Chris, why the pressure don't happen?
This is Palms Pressing 3.
Now, my mother told me never to answer a question with a question.
Sir, my client has answered every question asked by this committee with the utmost sincerity.
Such an honor for me to be on Palms Pressing 3, Michael.
Remember Michael's advice from the last time
was.
You were here. Okay?
It was.
All right, question one, Michael. We open with the Hall of Fame game tonight. The NFL preseason certainly looks a lot different than it did when you first entered the league, Michael. So here's a two-part question. In what ways is the current format better or worse for coaches in preparing their teams for the regular season? And in what way is the current format better or worse for bettors once the regular season begins?
Well, let's start with the coaches. For the coaches, it's worse because there's really no contact. You're limited in practice. You're limited in the amount of reps you can give players. Remember, when I started in 84, we had two-a-days. Walsh didn't really use two-a-days. We had a long practice in the morning, 8:30 to 11:30, full pads, very physical. Walk through at 2 o'clock, usually special teams on the other days. But it was a long, grueling day. Not the case any longer. So it's hard to install everything. And September is an extension of getting your team ready, especially from a physical contact standpoint, because it's harder to evaluate without the pads on. It's harder to evaluate without having contact drills. The good part is you're trying to cut down on injuries, which doesn't seem to be happening. We still have the same amount of injuries. Guys break an ankle, guy has a non-contact ACL, Achilles, all those things. So from a coaching standpoint, I think it's more challenging now than it ever was. There's no time. There is no time to really understand what you're dealing with, and there's room for mistakes. From the betting standpoint, again, there's no time. We really can't handicap these teams because we've cut down the preseason to three. And we know that guys don't play in the last game, and we know guys barely play in the first game. So we really won't have a look at some of these young players to see kind of what influence. And there's so much misinformation that comes out of camps. For example, Tariq Cohen having a great camp. He's back to his way. Oh, by the way, he just retired. So you got to be really careful. Today, Colin Cowherd said on his show that, you know, Joe Milton could beat out Drake May. I don't care how bad Drake May looks. He's going to look better than Joe Milton. Ask anybody from Tennessee who's watched games. Like, Joe Milton's a very athletic player, but he's not going to beat out Drake May. Not now, not tomorrow, not next year. So, like, you've got so many bad takes that come out. It's hard for the better to get a good, accurate portrayal of what's happening, which makes it very hard because we can't use our eye test to examine what we're seeing. So that's really a challenge.
All right, question number two, Michael. Over the last month or so, we've delved into several different betting markets during the Pressing Three, including Coach of the Year, first coach to be fired. I want to talk about this interesting market, at least for me now, for a quarterback to take the first snap for a team. Now, let's throw out the Raiders, because that's sort of been a coin flip all along between O'Connell and Minshew. But of the others that were favored, all of them have really gotten steamed up, whether it's Brissett or Darnold or whoever, except one. And that's Bo Nix. Bo Nix's odds have actually come down. Now, you were so good on the draft with Bo Nix. Are you still confident that Bo Nix will get the start in week one for the Broncos? And now that the odds have come down, is it worth a bet?
Yeah, I'm very confident. I mean, unless Bo Nix has really done a bad job every day at practice, I can't imagine that. And it's not throwing the football, it's mentally handling it. And I just don't think Jarrett Stidham or Zach Taylor is going to beat him out. So, yeah, I'm very confident in Bo Nix. I think if Sean was panicking, we would probably hear it. You would hear some rumblings. Oh, they're not having a good camp. Jeff Legwald, who's a very good beat reporter out of Denver, would be saying some things. I don't get that sense. Look, the way Denver won games last year was they played better defense. If you take the 70-point game out of what they gave up, especially the 350 yards rushing against the Dolphins in that game, their defense was pretty good when they're healthy, and I think they can be. They want to run the football. They want to control the line of scrimmage. They need more production out of their run game. Williams needs to have a better season than he did last year coming off the ACL. But I think, to me, Nix is the guy because I think Sean's going to program him to run the offense the way he wants it run.
All right, question three, Michael. Now, last year, I was very bullish on the Cleveland Browns, more than any other team like I am this year on the Bengals. And we cashed the Browns over ticket and to make the playoffs. And we cashed the over. I was sitting with Ben Wilson.
I remember that.
The over in the wild card game because they were on the road. But to me this year, they're a very difficult handicap. Obviously in a tough division. I just can't make sense of the defensive home road splits. How could there be that much of a dichotomy? Is the crowd noise that responsible in Cleveland for the snap count and getting up that the splits could be this different? And the other thing is I'm not really bullish on Watson coming back to form and being an elite quarterback in the NFL. Please provide your handicap on the Cleveland Browns.
I'm down on the Browns, and I was up on the Browns last year. I thought they had a better chance, but there's been no indication from Deshaun Watson that he's going to turn the corner. He's played 12 games there. And, you know, his yards per attempt has been 6.5. He just doesn't throw it. Now, people will say, well, you know, the second half of the Baltimore game, he was much better. I'm not ready to say that. I think to me, I really think that was a problem. I think he's been a problem in terms of making plays and connecting with his teammates and doing all those things. As for the defense, when you break it down, I mean, look, this is a team that, you know, they forced as many turnovers at home that they forced on the road. It's just the points that they allowed and the protection wasn't as good. And I think the older defensive linemen on the road didn't play as well and people took advantage of them. You know, this was and the other thing that's fascinating about the Browns defensively, Mike, is this was the worst red zone defensive team in the National Football League, the worst red zone team, but they were the best third down team. How do those two things make sense? They really don't. 71% of the time, teams scored when they got the ball touchdowns in the red zone, but they only converted third down 29.1% of the time. So those two things go against each other. And then they were a bad first quarter team. They really, teams game planned well against them. And in the fourth quarter, they really couldn't adjust. They didn't have enough scheme. They gave up 107 points in the fourth, 107 in the first, 107 in the fourth. So the splits are interesting. But I think at the end of the day, they don't have enough talent in the defensive front to dominate like they did. And I think there's a luck factor that went into some of their games playing at home. I'm not buying them. Look, losing Callahan's going to hurt them. Stefanski's already said he's calling plays. They brought in Ken Dorsey. The front office meddles around everything. So I'm just not sure that in the North, they're going to be the best team.
You were just telling me, Deshaun Watson, you guaranteed, you know, at like quarterback 15 play, you would be so much higher, but you can't.
He had one good half?
Basically.
Since he's come back to the league, he played one good half. Michael, let's get into that other question that I sort of talked about. Torrey Taylor goes from Iowa, gets drafted by the Bears. Sensational job. We talk about how a place kicker can affect a game, and we really don't talk about punters or how good your punt coverage is or the ability to make teams go the long field. Can Torrey Taylor be a significant factor in the Bears' success this year? How important is a punter in today's NFL?
Well, he fits perfectly with the Bears because the Bears are going to play a bend. They're a zone concept defense, right? They want to create a negative play, get you in a long down distance. But where they really want to specialize is forcing you to not make a big play. They're going to play zone. It's hard to throw the ball over their head. And so if it takes you eight plays, they're saying to you, you'll mess up one of those plays. You'll screw it up. You'll get in second and 14 and we'll win this. I think that's what happens. I mean, you know, that's really where you want to play on the long field. That's what made Baltimore, you know, with Justin Tucker not having a great season last year and them still scoring as many points. Because with Tucker, if they got the ball, once they cross the 50, you're looking at 3 points. You call the defense differently. But with the punter controlling field position, it's huge. We don't talk enough about it, but it's huge because it takes you longer to score, especially if you're a team that doesn't make explosive plays down the field.
No doubt. Bears, can't wait to see the punting on display tonight.
Oh, it will be.
There will be punting with the Tyson Bajan experience out there today. I enjoyed my second installment of the Palms Pressing.
We're together the next 2 days,
aren't
we?
Yeah. All right. Excited for it, Mike. Yeah, it's going to be a blast. We'll be up early watching a lot of Olympic stuff. Great show as always, Michael.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Ben. I'll see you on Sunday, Ben.
Beautiful.
We'll let them go to Dallas and do that scout.
Yeah, of course. You know what has to.
Gluttons for punishments, these guys are. Cowboys fans.
All right, up next, it's Sharp Money here on VSiN as we wrap things up on this Thursday edition of the Lombardi Line.